Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Paul Kanger, who returns to this microphone, and we appreciate that very much. Dr. Kanger is a best-selling author. He's a syndicated columnist. He's also a professor of political science and of history at Grove City College, and we're going to talk right now about the subject of Fidel Castro and his life and legacy. Dr. Kanger has written a number of books related to communism, including Dupes, and The Communist. Dr. Kanger, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Jerry. Always good to be with you. Thanks.
Okay. Now, I find an interesting divide when it comes to the life and legacy of Castro. Some are celebrating his life, and others are saying good riddance at his death last week.
Yeah, well, good riddance is absolutely the proper response. I mean, there's nothing to celebrate here. This guy was a monster. I mean, he was the world's longest, worst, longest running dictator. He took over in 1959, and you know, his brother Raul took over about 4 or 5 years ago. But Fidel's basically hovered like a ghost over Cuba for about 60 years. And you know, it was February 1957 that Herb Matthews, the awful reporter of the New York Times, ran his page one, a front page story in the Sunday New York Times, February 1957, quoting Fidel, promising free elections, democracy, saying that he was anti-communist, that he was pro-capitalist, and talking about how he was for social justice, and on and on and on and on and on. And Fidel took over January 1959, came to America in April 1959, did a show, did Meet the Press with Lawrence Spivak, spoke at the National Press Club, went from New York to Washington, touting free elections, democracy, saying, I'm for democracy, I'm against communism. Well, I mean, we waited 60 years. And not only did we not get democracy or free elections, we got a Marxist-Leninist dictatorship. So the guy was a liar and a brute dictator, and of course good riddance. And that's how the people of Cuba feel, too. When if they're free to say that, they'll say that. Anybody who thinks otherwise is a useful idiot.
Which is a term from Lenin. When did Castro cross over to become communist? Because I understand early in his life he wanted to basically be a baseball player, and that didn't work out for him. And then, you know, adios capitalism. When did he embrace communism, and why?
Yeah, that's a good point. He was a good baseball player. He was a very good pitcher, actually. But it was when he was in college. That's when the switch happened, when he was in college. Like a lot of people, and probably like a lot of the children of a lot of your parents that are listening right now, parents are sending their kids off to secular, extremely liberal colleges. They're gonna come away being pro-gay rights, pro-gay marriage, pro-abortion socialists, and the parents are gonna pay for it. But that's what happened with Fidel.
Where did he go? Did he go to college?
He went to the University of Havana.
Okay.
His father owned massive amounts of land, thousands of acres on the eastern part of the island. You know, Fidel is what we would call, Jerry, a mansion Marxist. Basically, he was a limousine leftist. He was raised Roman Catholic, taught by religious people, and he would eventually become a flaming atheist who persecuted the church. So really, he went and violated everything. He betrayed everything that he was brought up under. So it happened in his university years. By the time he was in his 30s, he was a full-blown Marxist-Leninist, and I would give you the exact age. By the time he was 35 years old, he had fully turned to the Soviet Union and turned Cuba into a communist despotism and a Soviet client state. And he went on to murder, or have murdered, tens of thousands of people, probably somewhere in the range of about 15,000 to 18,000 people that he and Che and Raul killed in prison or had shot with bullets to the back of the head. And that doesn't even count the tens of thousands of people who died drowning, trying to swim 100 miles to get out of Cuba to try to come to the United States. So, and why do they have to swim? Because Cuba is a surreal island that bans boats. They have to ban boats, or nobody would be left on the island. They would all leave. So anybody who says that Fidel has done good things, well, then why does he have to ban boats if he's doing good things? That's one of the most absurd things I've ever heard.
Well, Colin Kaepernick says that, hey, he's brought, free health care to everybody and better education.
Right. Well, he is, I'm sorry to name call, he's a dupe. He's an absolute dupe. And look, I would say this. Any progressive or Western European nanny state, cradle to grave, womb to tomb, welfare state socialists will tell you that you could get quote unquote free health care like they've done throughout Western Europe without resorting to a Marxist-Leninist dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
So, great, free health care. Why do they have to create a Marxist-Leninist dictatorship to do it? You know, you could just be a garden variety socialist, leftist, progressive and come up with quote unquote free health care. You don't have to be a brute Marxist dictator to do it. This is one of these canards, one of these platitudes that, sophomoric, unsophisticated liberals who pride themselves in their brilliance come up with, and they don't even know what it means.
You know, it's amazing to me that some people will make Fidel Castro a hero, but also the same with Che Guevara. I've seen, for example, some Hollywood movie stars with bracelets with Che Guevara's image or wearing T-shirts or whatever. This guy was a murderer, without any kind of due process.
Well, he was even worse than Fidel. They said Fidel killed because he felt he had to kill, and he did it, and he went through with it. But Che Guevara was bloodthirsty.
Mm.
And there are quotes from Che saying, lusting for blood.
Mm.
Che actually pulled the trigger. Che ran La Cabana, which was the main prison on the island in the early 1960s, and actually had a wall removed from his office in La Cabana so he could see below, so he could watch the executions take place when he couldn't actually be down there to call on people to do the executing. And as for these Hollywood people, and again, useful idiots, it's a term by Lenin, it dupes, that's an old Cold War term, but it applies so well here. They probably literally wouldn't be alive if Che and Fidel had their way in October 1962 and launched the nuclear missiles at the United States. Those two guys actually wanted to do that. Why didn't it happen? Because Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet leader, when he realized that these two lunatics, actually wanted to launch 162 missiles, nukes at the United States, which JFK Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara correctly said would have killed 80 million Americans. I mean, we lost 300,000 people in World War II, would have killed 80 million Americans. Khrushchev said, these guys are insane. Mm. They are nuts. They are out of their minds. Get the missiles out of Cuba immediately. Mm. Now, immediately. And here we are years later, and these guys are celebrities,
yeah,
to people in Hollywood and in the academy and in our universities. And that is a testimony to the incredible ignorance
yeah,
of people on the left, not knowing what they're really dealing with these guys.
I've seen a photograph that purports to be, and it's from a post of Bill Ayers himself, apparently, and it's like a little doll of Che Guevara, and he has it on his mantle place. And I was like, wow,
sure.
You think about the Second Commandment,
yeah.
No graven images.
Right. Well, hey, look, Che Guevara was the literal poster boy for the Weather Underground. The Weather Underground's manifesto, Prairie Fire, which was written in 1974, and the Weather Underground, they were domestic terrorists, and the actual manifesto, Prairie Fire, was written by Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, Jeff Jones, and Cecilia Sojourn, I think, was the fourth author. There were four authors, and they Che Guevara is their poster boy. They mention him throughout the book. And the Weather Underground, Mark Rudd, who was another member of the Weather Underground, said that that their rallying cry was Che's cry of more Vietnams. We want more Vietnams for the United States. More Vietnams, more Vietnams, more Vietnams. The Weather Underground's hero, it wasn't Mao, it wasn't Stalin, it wasn't Lenin, it was Che. And Mark Rudd said, you know, Che was like our Jesus. We wanted to be like Che, right? WWCD, what would Che do?
Wow.
So Che was a hero to these domestic terrorists in the United States. So that's not a surprise.
And still is. By the way, one comment about Khrushchev and the missile crisis. Surely John F. Kennedy's resolve and sending out those ships and so forth to Cuba, you know, in those waters and so forth, I'm sure that had a big part. It showed that the United States, you know, was serious in opposition to those, Cuban missiles or the missiles in Cuba.
Well, yeah, look, Kennedy did a really good job with the Cuban missile crisis. He redeemed himself from the Bay of Pigs.
Right.
He did a terrible job. However, really, what convinced Khrushchev to get the missiles out of there was when he realized that he was dealing with men who actually wanted to launch nuclear Armageddon.
Wow.
And he said, if he could have felt in confidence that he could have kept the missiles there as a check to the United States and the United States putting missiles in Turkey or you know, somewhere close to Soviet territory,
yeah,
he probably would have. But he realized that he was dealing with madmen.
Interesting.
Madmen.
Yeah.
And so he said, we've got to get these things out of there.
You know, this is a perspective you never really hear. But let's go back to Che Guevara for a moment.
And it's totally documented. You can read this in Sergei Khrushchev. That's Nikita Khrushchev's son.
Oh, okay.
Sergei Khrushchev is an academic. He wrote a 3-volume biography of his father, published by Penn State University Press. It's the seminal work on the subject,
yeah,
where he quotes all of this stuff from all the different Soviet officials. And that's not the only case. Robert McNamara and others are on record saying this. And I quote some of this stuff in my American Spectator piece. It's called Death by Fidel, if people want to check it out. It's spectator.org.
AmericanSpectator.org, and that's Death by
Death by Fidel.
Death by Fidel. When did Che join Fidel? He wasn't originally from Cuba, was he?
No, he's actually Argentinian, and he hooked up with Fidel in the 1950s. And Fidel realized that he had here basically a Himmler, right? Himmler being the head of the SS, the Gestapo,
yeah,
under Hitler. He had a Beria, Lavrenti Beria was Stalin's henchman in the Soviet Union. He had an M.Y. Lapsus, that's the founder of the Cheka, the NKVD, that was Lenin's man. And Fidel really saw in Che that he had the proper psychopath that he needed to spill the blood that Fidel needed to spill in order to consolidate his whole. Really, most of the people that were killed under Fidel were killed in the 60s.
Yes.
Well, that doesn't include the people who drowned,
right,
in the 70s,
right,
and 80s and 90s.
But so most of those people, then, it was under the supervision of Che Guevara.
That's right. Probably, I want to say off the top of my head, 6,000-7,000 people, maybe. And more people were killed at Che's La Cabana, which was his little gulag, his personal. In fact, Che fell in love with the place, Jerry, when he got there, because it was an old Spanish fortress that had a moat and everything around it.
Yeah.
And Che just aroused Che. He just envisioned, you know, bodies bloodied and bobbing in the water.
Wow.
Thought, oh, yeah.
Oh, man. What a sadist. So now
he was sadistic. People will tell you.
Yeah.
Che was sadistic.
Those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. How did Che Guevara die? I mean, this is interesting. I set out to talk about Fidel Castro, but we're really talking about his number one henchman. Go on.
Yeah. He died in Bolivia, and the Bolivians took him out. And it was pretty good evidence that Fidel essentially handed him over.
Ooh.
and allowed him to be killed. And his final words were something to the effect, I'm Che Guevara, and I want to surrender or I want to negotiate, which is, you know, what Saddam Hussein did. It's what Osama bin Laden did. These guys are always cowards. They talk about giving their lives and other people giving their lives for the revolution. But they're always the first to walk out with the white flag. So the Bolivians stick with that.
Wow.
They're not walking this out.
Well, it sounds like you're breaking up, but we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Paul Kanger and visionsandvalues.org for more information. Always a pleasure, Paul. God bless you.
Thanks,
now. Jerry. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.